Today's episode is brought to you by Mic Up Media. Mic Up Media is my podcast company, and we specialize in helping inspiring leaders that have a mission, a purpose, get seen and get known and get the exposure that their brand deserves. Nothing inspires me more than seeing amazing humans growing and impacting more people. And I believe that podcasting is one of the most important steps you can take. Now, there's many things you need to do to get your mission out in the world, grow your brand and all of that. But podcasting, to me, maybe biased, is up there with one of the most important. Getting on podcasts helps you do a few things. Helps you build relationships with the host, which can turn into potential partnerships, could potential clients, building a relationship with the different communities and listeners, which can end up being potential buyers. It can help you get better at telling your story. So if you want to get on stages, you want to get your message out there in these events around the world, you got to be able to dial in your story. And telling your story on a podcast is a fantastic way to do it. And of course, content. We all need content, right? Nowadays, with all the bells and whistles, you can get a lot of content and reels and shorts through podcast interviews. So if you're somebody that feels like you're tired of being the best kept secret, you want to get your message out into the world, you feel like you've done the work, you built the thing, now people want to know about you, it's time to throw gas on the fire, well, let's go. Book a call with my Mic Up team. Let's have a chat and see if you're a good fit. We got a promo going on right now we can discuss on the call. And yeah, your story, your mission, it's worth it. Book a call. Let's get you booked on some shows. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to University of Adversity. I'm your host, Lance Isios. Today's guest had her entire life flipped upside down when her partner, the love of her life, died suddenly out of nowhere. She was forced to pick up the pieces and try to understand why this happened, but most importantly, how to move forward from it. This is such a powerful conversation for anybody, for any of you that are currently going through loss or grieving, or to prepare you for when you do. Because the reality is simple. We are all going to go through loss. We are all going to lose the people we love. And my hopes is that when you listen to this show and we talk about this kind of stuff, is that you realize that you aren't alone. And that I hope that when you hear stories and perspectives like the one you're going to hear today, it just helps you feel better about the situation, hopefully provide you with a different perspective and some tools to help you move through the situation you're going through, or so that you're equipped for it in the future. Today's guest is my dear friend, Nicole Shaka. She is a yoga teacher, an FRCMs practitioner, professional dancer, and mother to her son, Bo. She is currently based in Los Angeles. She trains a diverse clientele, including working moms, entrepreneurs, former athletes, and A-list celebrities. Her expertise has earned her features on The Doctors TV show, E! Online, and in the New York Times.
Life is going to give you challenges, struggles. It's going to force you to face your fears. Even though these may feel like your worst enemy, in truth, these are actually your greatest allies. My name is Lance Isios. Welcome to the University of Adversity.
In the past year, how has your relationship to death and the afterlife changed?
Dun, dun, dun. It has done a complete 180. As a mascot of fearing death, that's who I've been my entire life. I'm the woman that fears death. I was faced with that in the most disturbing and unfortunate way by losing my partner 6 months ago, as you know. And from that, literally from that day, from September 16th onward, my curiosity around death softened to the point where I wanted to know everything about it. I wanted to understand how we're more than these physical bodies, how the afterlife works, how we are spiritual beings having this physical experience, and how we just go through the motions so often. And it's not something we talk about in American culture. It just becomes this taboo topic that's absolutely doing a disservice to every human on the planet, myself included, having been the person who was too scared to speak about it and fearful of it in all ways. Now it's something that I'll bring up in light conversation at the Sprouts Market. Like, no, I got no problems discussing it, talking about it, asking questions. And if you had told me any of this would have happened, I would have been gutted and shocked. But now that I'm living this life, I'm happy to be here. Honestly, never thought I would say that.
What are some of the things that you had to do or still do in order to come to that conclusion?
First and foremost, I had to let go of the idea that people judging me had anything to do with me. I mean, that's a good lesson for us all, no matter what the topic is. But I specifically felt, I have never said this out loud. I specifically felt eyes on me, not criticizing the way I grieved, but it was like they were watching. They wanted to see what was next, how I was going to respond. Or if someone saw me in the flesh, it was like, if I was smiling, I remember just people kind of looking confused, like, why would she be smiling right now? It was just this very strange me interpreting their judgment, trying to release their judgment and still feel my feelings and make sense of it all in real time, all at the exact same moment. That was a trippy feeling, but I'm more and more comfortable with it now. I think it was that initial first 2 months where I felt like all eyes were on me and I didn't know what to do. And it was very raw, and just every interaction, I felt like I was, I don't know, being observed like a zoo animal. That was very strange.
How did you, like, why did you feel that way?
I think because, and this is a double-edged sword, because people showed up for me. Like, a lot of people showed up for me. It wasn't like I was doing this in isolation. I wasn't just with my family. I was with my neighbors and my dear friends and my outside circle and my acquaintances and clients that I hadn't seen in 3 years, and people coming out of the woodwork to help me and support me. I mean, the dance studio I grew up dancing in, holding a special event like a month after the fact, raising money for him, dancing in Matt's honor, dancing for me. It was more attention than I've received maybe ever at one time at the hardest point of my life. That was weird.
Did you feel resentment that they weren't there for other things going on?
No, I didn't even think about that. I think I felt humbled that people would take time out of their lives to write me messages or call me or text message me or hold a fundraiser in honor of Matt or myself. And it was, I don't know. I felt held at the same time as being watched. And I've talked about this with my mom a lot, but it was being as sad and as broken as I was, and to feel so loved and supported at the same time was the hardest part, I think, of the whole thing. Because I wanted people to understand that I was so appreciative of their presence and their kindness and their generosity. And at the same time, I wanted to curl up and hold and die. And then the next day, I had energy and I felt alive, and I felt like Matt was literally moving through me, wanting me to express myself and tell my story. And then I'd go back to feeling devastated. It was just this tornado of emotion, nonstop.
If you had to go back to before you lost Matt and you had to give that old self advice about grief, what is something you would say to prepare them? To prepare you or somebody that will go through a similar situation?
I think here comes my woo just in time, Lance. We've been on for 7 minutes. Here comes the woo. You better start interacting with spirit now, because the greatest gift given to me was through that Medium interview I had with Laura Lynn Jackson, where she channeled Matt for 2 hours, and everything that I was hoping and then some was confirmed and validated for me, because the signs that I was receiving from him didn't make me crazy. They gave me an extension of the language that I shared with him while we were in our physical bodies. So it was this progression of a relationship that I never would have explored or thought possible had I not gone through it. So what I would tell myself prior is just keep opening the door to spirit. Like I'm a big prayer. I'm a a person who prays. And I just made a TikTok about this the other day, but when I get into like a spin class, when I get into a workout and it's a flow state workout, like a swimming situation, maybe surfing or spin class specifically, I can get into this flow of gratitude. And to me, that is speaking with spirit. I feel like a portal opens. I'm in connection with my higher self. And I do that frequently. I mean, it's part of my job, but I've done it for years and years unconsciously, but it became very clear after Matt died that that's exactly what's happening. Like there is a chain of events happening. Not only am I experiencing the neurochemical concoction of working out and that dopamine rush and all those other neurotransmitters, but also I feel more connected to my higher self than I've ever felt when I'm doing that sort of thing. So I was on the right path working out and exploring that. And I would just tell anybody listening right now, just open up to that. Meditate, pray, get curious, ask questions, ask for signs. Like let the other side show you. It's a gift.
What was your relationship with religion and spirituality before? Like, mm-hmm. I know you said that you prayed, but like, what did that look like as far as like, yeah, I mean, you get that, you know, you get mm-hmm. what I mean.
I do. So I was raised in a fairly religious household. We went to church every Sunday. We were raised Catholic. I was, you know, I went through all my sacraments and everything for Catholicism, Catholic high school. But I always had a lot of questions within the Catholic Church. I didn't feel as connected to God in the church setting as I did in my room reading my All Saints book. I had this book. I would read all about the saints, and I was more interested and the lives of like St. Joan of Arc. And I would get really obsessed with the saints. And that's where I felt God the most. It wasn't in the, I've never said that out loud. Lance, what are what's happening right now? Versus going to church, sitting in the pews, moving through the motions of the sacraments and the ritualistic nature of a Catholic mass, I felt more connected to spirit, reading stories about saints and praying and being in my own dialogue. So that already put me on the outskirts of things, like growing up in a religious household. Like my mom, it's Lent right now as we record this, and she goes to mass every Sunday. And that's part of like what she does, or Sunday, excuse me, every day. She goes to mass every day right now. And that's part of her belief system. And it's part of who she is, and she loves it. And she's also incredibly curious about, she texted me the other day. She's like, have you ever heard of channeling? I said, yes, mom. I'm like, let's get into it. But the point being is, even having grown up in a more structured religious household, I was always allowed to have my spiritual woo-woo conceptual beliefs. And I had that with Matt. That was part of our relationship. I prayed all the time. I meditated. I mean, I still do frequently, almost every day. And the conversation just feels open and continuous. So it's not about the structure of a religious building or even the dogmatic approach of what that looks like on paper. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense. How did that affect your grieving process when you have people so close to you that are in, you know, religion and, you know, that way? And then, you know, you're doing your way. It's great that your mom is open to that, and that's amazing. But like, I'm sure that there's people that aren't as open. So I wondered if you like went through any of the, here, you should do this, and like, people telling you, and then maybe not, and you're like, well, I actually want to do this. Like, did you have to go through much of that? Or not really?
Not really. And what's weirder is if they did do it, I don't think I heard them.
Interesting.
Like I was so, I mean, I still am. I say this in past tense, but it's still happening now. I'm so dialed in a different way than I ever was prior to his passing. And I don't even hear it. If they were trying to judge or critique the grief in words, like, maybe you shouldn't. I don't remember hearing that. People just let me have my process. When I was, the one thing that does stick out though, is the, like I mentioned 10 minutes ago, when I would see people's reaction to me in the flesh, in person, that was the part that was like,
right.
They either would expect to see me and then maybe I wasn't meeting their expectation. Maybe I wasn't sad enough that day, or maybe, you know, again, that was the part that was incongruent.
Mm.
Yeah. So I guess that's more about our expectation of what grief looks like. I had a lot of people tell me though, they were like, don't let anyone tell you how to grieve. And I said, that's perfect because I don't know what I'm doing. And I've never felt so out on a limb ever in my life. Like it's whichever way the wind blows, that's how I'm going to manage today's grief processing. And I did. And I do still. I mean, I like last week I was crazy emotional. I was like, what are we doing? You just never know.
Do you find people asking you for advice with grief?
Oh, yeah. I just got a voice note today from a friend of mine. And she's like, I'm listening to your podcast and I don't know what episode she was on, but she's like, you have no idea how you're helping people. Because nearly every episode that I've recorded so far, I mean, ours especially, I'm talking about grief. I'm talking about what that feels like. Everyone has experienced it in some capacity. And if they haven't, I hate to say, I mean, it's an inevitable part of life, but to hear from a friend who's like, you have no idea how you're impacting people. You're just dropping little seeds and you're planting these things and, or big aha moments where people can have a better understanding of what they're going through. And that to me is, that's worth all the leprechaun coins in the world. Like, that's it.
One of the things that I admire about you is your relatability, like, and your ability to use humor as well to like, help people understand things a little bit better. And it's just like, you know, even listening to a couple of your solo episodes, there's just such a human behind what you're saying. Like, it's such a, and I think people really need that realness, and, you know, humor is part of that.
Oh yeah.
Like, humor is part of the alchemy.
Yeah.
That we sometimes forget because we judge humor as being, if you're laughing, you must not care.
Yeah.
Actually, it's part of, if you lost somebody, they would want you to feel laughter.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like it's part of the process, and you do a really good job with having humor in your ability to communicate with people.
Yeah. I remember when I was a little girl and my dad, I was with my dad someplace and he was having a conversation with, you know, a couple of adults. And I remember he made a joke and I was just like, that was the most painful experience in my life. We walked away and I'm like, you're not funny. Just so you know, Dad, you're not funny. And he's like, just wait. And he was like, just wait. And I was like, on what? But I recognize now, like, he's one of my favorite people, hands down ever, but he is so random. And I realize so much of my humor comes directly from him. Everything that I hated that he did in that moment, I literally live it every single day. I'm like, oh yeah. So that's cool. Stepped right into it. But I would see how he would work because he was a head and neck surgeon, retired now, but he would work with patients and I would hear him take calls and he would always make these funny jokes. I mean, again, funny in quotations. My 8-year-old self did not find it funny. But he managed to be so relatable because humor breaks the ice. Humor is another common denominator. We love to laugh. Mm-hmm. And it makes life more tolerable. You know, I mean, that's why do we go to comedy shows? We just want to feel good. We want to be laughing at the absolute absurdity of life, of the worst possible situation. Yeah, I mean, hands down, worst situation. Can you laugh at it? I hope at some point, maybe not today, but like a year from now, you got to. I love how you said alchemizing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of honoring the person.
Yeah.
Too. And like laughing, there's, I think laughter is just so misunderstood. There's like this shame attached to it. And, you know, even like when you watch people during, you know, COVID or even now, you know, memes make my day. Like something that's just like offside that I just, it's just like, man, I needed that today. Like I needed
how
that.
How do we live without them?
Like seriously though, it's like it breaks up the day.
Yeah.
And it gives you the ability to just, man, that's funny. Like, oh, like, it's just this, it's magical. Like, it's like humor is just so important. And I was actually listening to Aubrey Marcus's podcast recently, and he was talking about how their comedians are actually like shamans, like someone like Joe Rogan or like somebody that's really good at like poking fun of certain things and just making a laugh out of it. Because at the end of the day, when you zoom up and look down, like, what is this actually?
What is this?
You know, it's like, you gotta
what
laugh.
The fuck are we doing? And like Dave Chappelle, whenever I watch that man, I'm like, he takes the gnarliest concepts and drizzles it down into one joke. And you're like, what did I just laugh at? And also, oh my God, it's not that serious. Oh, I mean, that's another, every time I use that line, the one dream that I had, the very first dream I had where Matt came to me and my dream, I remember he like put his arm around me and he was holding an index card. And I remember because I knew, I was like, oh, I know your thumb. I know your hand. Like, and he's pointing and he's going like this. And the one takeaway from that dream was death is not that serious. And I woke up, I remember I woke up hysterically crying and I'm like, how dare you? But at the same time, maybe it's not. Maybe it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. Ram Dass, his quote was, what did he say? He said, death to the ego is like the finish line, but to the soul, it's just like, it's the renewal or it's the beginning. It's not like a stopping point. But to the, you know, to the soul, it's almost like, it's just you're rebirthing into something else. But our ego, it's like, oh, it ends here. So that's why we would fear it, right?
Right. Like because we're all wrapped up in,
You think, oh, it's all going to end. There's nothing else. It's going to be, if I did this, I'm going to go up to the clouds. If I did this, I'm going to go to the lava or whatever. Like, but there's this programming for that for sure. This death experience.
Oh my God. And we just keep reinforcing it, which is remarkable. You know what I mean? Because I have an 11-year-old, as you know, and to watch him, I'm going to use your word again, alchemize this experience. Like I just asked him, this is the kind of questions, again, maybe not parent of the year. Okay. So maybe people don't be taking your advice from me, parenting advice, that is. I'm driving and I just off the cuff, I was like, how would you like rate your childhood? We're just driving. And he's like, he looks at me and he's like, well, not great. And I was like, oh my God, what? He's like, well, I lost my stepdad. I don't know. What do you want me to say? And I was like, oh God. I'm like, I meant like just as a whole, like I didn't mean that necessarily horrific moment. But point being, he made a joke. I mean, he's very funny. I'm very fortunate. He gets it all from my dad. He's a very funny kid. But for him to take the gnarly question that I should not be asking an 11-year-old of how would you rate your childhood and then flip it on its head and be like, well, not great due to this gigantic life experience I've just barely survived. But he already finds humor in so many things, which is a wonderful mirror for me. I mean, I find it naturally, but to be in his presence and to watch him grieve the way we both are, which is, you know, unique to each one of us, but he's able to find joy and laughter, and he brings Matt along with him in conversation, and he wears his clothes, which Matt would absolutely freak out over, but now he's the same size. So I guess that's good use of,
hey,
I mean, wow. I'm like, you get to wear a shirt and you get to wear a shirt. So let's talk about alchemizing.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned something in one of your episodes that I thought was really important to bring up, that I think is such great advice. And that is not being ready for things. Like how you shared how anything that was great in life or anything that was hard or anything, like you were never fully ready. And I think this is such an important topic, because when are we really ready for anything, to do the thing, to go through the thing, to, right? Speak to us about that a little bit, because I think it's just so valuable.
Totally. I'm in this mastermind called The Category of One with Erica Reitman, and she is one of the most unique mentors I've ever come across, because she is such a category of one herself, meaning she just stands out fashion-wise, her business sense, her emails are just atrocious in the best way. Like, it's just, I've never seen business done like this. So I was on a Zoom call with her, and she was explaining how you're not ready is one of her favorite concepts, because it applies to everyone in business and their personal life in every aspect. The times that you are faced with great opportunity or great challenge or horrible tragedy, you are not ready for those times. You're just not. How could you be, right? Sometimes you're going to do the preparation, but then a light goes out, or you do the preparation and your pants split in half, or whatever it is. But she said, when you think about that, the greatest version of you rises to the occasion. And that's really the truth, because that's what I was talking about in that particular episode that you're referencing. I was talking about getting married. I wasn't ready for that. Getting pregnant, I wasn't ready for that. Opening my own business, wasn't ready for that. Getting divorced, wasn't ready for that. Finding the love of my life, deceased, wasn't ready for that. Starting the podcast, wasn't ready for that.
Yeah.
But every single challenge was another door opening. And you just feel this very subtle ascension of self, which is, in my opinion, what it's all about. It's that subtle ascension of self. And you cannot experience that unless you just step right into it. You have to step into the pile of poo. You just got to step into it sometimes. Because think about it. And I mean, you've had incredible, incredible accomplishments and incredible tragedy. And you even mentioned that on, I think, on our interview where you were talking about when your brother passed, if you hadn't been, not your father, if you hadn't been sober, if you hadn't been taking care of your mental health at that point, you weren't ready when it happened, but imagine, it's just like all these little baby steps are compounded.
Yeah. Yeah. And subconsciously, like, you may be more ready than you think you are, but consciously we think we're not.
Right.
But really you've signed up for this,
mm-hmm.
right? And I feel like that's the interesting part, is that we don't know what's going on in the background, that we might actually be ready for whatever comes our way. And one of the things that when doing ayahuasca, and this is just a metaphor for life, it's like you only get what you can handle. Like you're never going to get anything that you can't handle,
yeah,
in the medicine space, especially too. It's just in life though. It's like, you're never going to get stuff that you don't have the ability to figure out. I feel like that. And what you're saying is so true, because like, it's like, and this is talked about in Stephen Pressfield's book, like The War of Art and Turning Pro. I've been like, yeah, right, amazing. There. Right?
War of Art, and best ever.
Turning Pro. Have you read that one?
No.
It's basically taking that same concept and like, how do you do what you do and turn into pro? Like taking that resistance, and how does a pro show up? He goes through all these different things. And it's just a great reminder when you're going to start something new, or if you're feeling that resistance, those two books. But it's like, how does a pro show up? And basically it's that when you do the thing and you show up and you're stepping up to the plate, you will get all of the power. You will get all of the things, all the resources to help you through that.
Yeah.
Right. Like you said, it's like, you may think you're not ready, But like, we never are going to fully feel ready. And if we do, then we're maybe not challenging ourselves enough.
I was going to say that.
It's like, oh, I'm ready. And then, no, you're not. You're going to get some curveball. The fact that you say you're ready just means that you haven't had your ass kicked yet.
Yeah. It's coming.
It's coming. And it's just so important for, I think, people. It's such a great reminder because, man, like, there's so many of those little things happening all the time. It's like, oh, when this thing's, when I have that in place or that in place and that in place. And then you just, your whole life is like, when, you know, I'll do that when in the spring, or I'll go do the thing and when it's hotter out or when it's colder out. It's like, I've watched people live their lives like this. I've seen family members do this.
Oh yeah. I just written, you know, I write those weekly emails that I send out. Oh, bless
we
you.
We got to get everybody to subscribe to those too.
Because yes.
You're just an entertainer. Let's just.
Ah, shit. Well, the theater degree is paying off. Thank you, Loyola Marymount University. What was I saying? God bless. Oh, in that email I had talked about briefly, I just kind of swiped over it, but success and failure are measurable in so many circles, right? But ultimately you decide if that was a success or a failure. And when you do something that you're not ready to do, 9 times out of 10, it's a success in retrospect because you had a massive breakthrough moment. You learned something about yourself. You got the opportunity, the practice run, the dress rehearsal, even if it was a full blown, you know, speaking engagement, you still got the dress rehearsal for the next great thing, the next big thing that's coming. Like, it's consistently, it can't be a failure. It's just always going to be a success because even the failure is a lesson. It's chock full of them if you allow it to be, you know?
Mm.
And this kind of goes along with the you're not ready business.
What advice would you have to somebody that wants to create their own thing and build community? And, you know, you have your programs, you're on demand and you're helping people and you got your newsletter. Like, what advice do you have for somebody that, because I feel like this is the way out for a lot of people, is to be able to create this personal brand and to be able to dial in these services for people and help people with like your skills. And, but it's hard because a lot of people get stuck. Right. And I feel like there's a lot of people that could benefit from that. So like, what has that been like for you? And do you have any advice for people that are kind of wanting to maybe doing the same sort of thing as you're doing?
Yeah. I think my secret is I don't take myself too seriously. Ever, maybe to a fault. And then secondly, I'm a consummate student. Like, I want to learn all this stuff. If it's not even in my sphere of practice, I still want to learn about it. Like, I'm obsessed. Like, I just got this book. What is this? The Secret Force of the Universe. It's about quantum entanglement. And I love that stuff. Does that have to do with joint health and down dogs? Meh. Maybe. Maybe not. But I think the best way to create community is to be a seeker yourself, to be consistently looking for more, because that frequency itself will draw in other folks that are of that mindset. If you think about it, every great teacher from Ram Dass or Dr. Joe Dispenza or Tony Robbins or whoever these people are that you're imagining, they've gone through a point of stagnation and frustration before they were creating community, right? Because that's the process. You have to go through that to up level to the next version of yourself. So if you're honest about what you're giving off into the world, then that same frequency finds you, right? That's the law. That's the exchange, so to speak. So I feel like if you vibrate at the place where you are a consistent seeker and a consummate learner, then you're going to be finding people that are of that same frequency, which means they're ready to elevate. It doesn't mean they're ready to drag you down. It doesn't mean they're ready to backstab you. It doesn't mean they're ready to shortchange you and like write a horrible Yelp review. That's a whole nother frequency. But I think the people that are willing to just consistently learn, stay open. Like, there's a Marcus Aurelius quote. We tried to name our dog Moose Aurelius, but he came out and he's scared of fuck all. He's scared of everything on the planet. So we're like, you'll just be a moose. We'll save the Aurelius for another time. But point being, Marcus Aurelius made a point about you don't have to have an opinion about everything. And I said, where were you in 2020, sir? I mean, still dead, but point being, you don't have to have an opinion about everything. It's fair that you cannot personally relate to the horrors that you're witnessing through your little black box cell phone on the other side of the planet, as much as you want to understand that and as empathetic as you can learn to be and all the ways that you can help support. It's okay to not have an opinion. I felt like the minute I read that, I felt so much freedom in my heart because obviously mad respect for Marcus Aurelius, but why do we feel the pressure to have an opinion about everything?
Yeah.
Where did that even come from?
Yeah. And it's,
why can't you say, I don't know?
Yeah. And how much do you love when somebody says, I don't actually know? Like,
it's so freeing. Like, I'm like, cool.
Yeah. I think as well too, with social media, there's also this pressure as a creator to like have this like stance on this bullshit that a lot of it is just a charade. And it's like, I want to speak about this because then I'll look like I care, but really it's just virtue signaling. Yeah. And sometimes just not saying anything is better, because if you don't know the truth, then don't fucking speak about it sometimes. Like if you don't really know.
Right.
Right. Especially with the weird dynamics of things going on.
It's yeah. It's almost though, it feels like a targeting system because it's such a trap. It's such a human trap to fall into that, to feel like you have to, A, for the sake of your tribal acceptance, for the tribe to accept you, you need to have an opinion. B, you don't want to look insensitive. God forbid you look insensitive. And then C, well, what are you doing? Are you doing your part? Like what? I mean, why don't you care? And that's not even what it's about. I'm speaking for myself. Like when I am unable to speak to a topic, it's because I feel inept. I don't know. I'm not there. I'm not living it. I'm getting my news from a fake news source, which if you don't buy into that, that's fine, but you're wrong. You know what I mean? Like it's all just a charade. So, oy.
Yeah. But that I feel like is coming around full circle, that the people, like you just said, like you don't have to have an opinion on that, on everything. And that to me, if you say, I don't know, or I don't have enough information, or I don't have an opinion on that, like that shows me where you're at emotionally, like where your nervous system is. Like,
yeah.
Are you, you know, reactive? Like it's, the more I do this work on myself, the more I learn, the more I realize, and I can spot people who just need to relax, and they're going through they're constantly in their fight or flight. And it's like, man, you just gotta like, you're so reactive to things. And, but it's by design with these phones, right? Like it's like, and when you put your phone away and you actually go and look at reality, it's usually okay. Things are okay.
Yeah. You know, it's like, right? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That, oh my God, I just had a whole left turn moment mentally. What if we had, I mean, it's not possible. What if we had like a national put your phone away day and we just all put our phones away and it was like 1978 all over again?
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
It would be amazing. They do that in Bali.
Of course they do.
Like they go, they turn off
that makes sense.
All lights and technology for a whole day, I think. Yeah.
We could never.
No.
Says a lot.
I wanted to ask you as well. So, you know, the way you show up, you have a certain energy that is very, like I said, it's very relatable. But also like, I feel like there's people, I can't see it, but maybe there is. As you get bigger and you grow, like, do you have a lot of haters pushing back? Like, because I see you as, I'm like, how could anybody not like this woman? Like, honestly. But of course, as you grow and as you start to, you know, you got, you know, big TikTok following and like the way you speak, people may be able to like not be able to receive it because they can't handle your like energy, because you're a powerful creature, right? Like you are though. You have like
you,
anybody that knows you, anybody that you know, you have like you're powerful in way you speak and conviction and just in laughter and everything. So what is that like? Do you have people that like haters and stuff, or you like, what is that like for you, and how do you deal with it?
This is crazy that you're bringing this up, because I just came across, I'd never seen this person before, but he was speaking at a seminar or something. And he's like, if you don't have haters, you're not doing the work. You're not out there. You haven't put yourself on the line. You haven't. But this kind of goes back to my whole having an opinion thing, because this was my qualm when everything was going down during 2020 and George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and these huge, big, life-altering concepts, if you think about it, right? They shift lives. These conversations are necessary and important and whatnot. I couldn't make sense of all of it. I just felt like I could see all sides. This sounds so bad.
It's not. That's not
I could bad. See all sides. And then I was like, great. Well, I can't say I can see all sides, because I'll be, you know, that's blasphemous to say that. I don't know where my haters are. I'm sure they're out there. And now I've really put it, now I'm just opening the door, floodgates. If my haters are out there, they're talking about me behind my back and not in my comment section or to my face. So I don't know what's going on with that, but I don't seem to have a lot of haters right now.
Well, that's amazing, because that may be because of the energy that you focus on. Maybe like,
I never thought of it like that.
Like
that. I like that.
But this is the way. I haven't had that many haters either, but I see people that do. And I get told the same thing. If you ain't having enough haters.
Right.
But then, you know, even like Tony Robbins, Joe Dispenza, they all get it. They all get haters. David Goggins gets haters, but his message is very like one way. Right. But I think it's also like, it's hard to, why would you want to hate somebody that is showing up and just, like, your energy and what you're focusing on, you don't participate in, like, I feel like if you don't participate in the bullshit, you don't get the bullshit in your life as much.
That has to be true.
Right?
That goes back to the frequency concept, right?
Like, like you were saying.
If you're emanating that fiery,
like trying
resistant,
to get a, trying like, to get a reaction, like trying to poke the bear, take the piss kind of thing.
Yeah. Then maybe that's what you get in return. I don't do that because I find that absolutely fruitless. Like I don't understand when I look at a comment section and people are going off. I'm like, you wasted how long? I wasted how long reading these dumb comments?
Yeah.
Like I would never get into it in a comment section or anywhere virtually. I don't want to have confrontation with the people I care about. And I know that confrontation is important, but I also like Matt and I, we rarely got in fights because we were friends first. Like I was friends with him for 21 years before, no, 19 years before we started dating or whatever it was. And I remember one time we snapped at each other in the car and Bo was in the back seat. And I mean, it was like Bo's head was on a swivel. He was like, we got home and I knew I had to rectify it right away. And I'm like, babe, that really hurt my feelings, what you said in the car. And he's like, I know. And he's like, and I'm sorry. I lashed out at you. I'm so sorry about that. But he's like, but you hurt my feelings, just so we're clear. And he was like, I'm sorry. I hurt your feelings. And Bo's like watching it happen. Right. But in that moment, I thought, that's confrontation that is fruitful, right? Because Bo got to see us go through it, respect one another enough to make amends and then move forward. The confrontation that we're dealing with haters and in the comments section and all this is like throwing spaghetti at a wall. It's just like anger.
Yeah.
Rage, shame. It just goes nowhere. It does nothing. So that's where I just think, I think you're onto something with that. I don't want any part of that. I wouldn't want that for anyone I care about. I wouldn't want that for an absolute stranger. So hopefully I don't radiate any of that. And hopefully you're not bringing it to my doorstep, because I'll pack it up and give it right back to you. I'm sorry. I don't want to.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I think that, you know, like we said, everybody's got opinions, and I feel there's people out there who see something in others and they get triggered because they feel that maybe they aren't showing up in their own lives or, you know, they get triggered. And I mean, this is why I've noticed it in myself And I've noticed it more and more, the more I work on myself and do this stuff, I can see these behaviors showing up. And a lot of these people that get upset about things, they only get upset about things on their phone, or they won't have these conversations in real life. Like, I remember back in the day when I was working in bars and hotels and stuff, and like, there'd be those people that would just be the email complainers.
Oh yeah.
Everything's an email. Oh, you forgot to do this. And I'd be like, hey, I'm right here. Why don't we have a chat? And then you see them in person and it's like, I was like, oh, hey, sorry about that. Oh yeah, no problem. No problem. It's like, why don't you just, instead of CCing the whole department, like, do you know what I'm saying? It's like,
oh yeah,
mentality. It's like, yeah, why don't we just have a conversation? But a lot of the people on here, they're just I just find, and I see in other people that they're just, yeah, they, it's like a one-sided thing. And a lot of people get stuck in that and they just, for whatever reason, I don't want any part of it either, but it's just interesting because, you know, I see it a lot out there and I'm like, man, I don't know how people deal with it.
Oh, that would eat me up truly, because my end goal is I want people to remember who they are, which is divine in nature. I want you to laugh your ass off. I want you to care for your body and care for the people and planet around you. Boom, done. There it is. There's the mission statement. And thank you. I don't see how the inverse of that is ever helping you, let alone the people that you're going at it with.
Yeah.
Like that leaves you depleted. There's a book, my child has a book called Fill Your Bucket or something. And it talks about all of us having buckets, right?
Yeah.
And no matter where you go, every single day, everyone's got a bucket. You're either pouring into other people's bucket or you're dipping into theirs. And if you think of it that way, why would you want to dip into someone else's bucket? Why would you want to leave someone else's bucket empty for them to, I mean, it's a beautiful conceptual little story, but I love it. And it applies to adults. It should apply to adults.
Well, yeah. And I think it can be, it doesn't have to be like haters, but it can be also like when you're building something, and I'm guilty of this and taking energy out of my own creations to like compare myself to other people. And it's kind of like, why am I using my valuable energy to ask why it's not working out? Why is it working out for them? It's like, they don't know who I am. Like, it doesn't matter. It's like, right, why would we do that? Why do we, you know, it's so much energy consumption, putting it into other things and other people and gossip and comparison, yeah, that it, like, you're literally, yeah, like you're draining your own bucket and trying to, like, you know, you're not trying to steal their bucket, but it's almost like there's like some envy there or some sort of weird, right? Like,
and it's, I don't think it would be the case, again, if we didn't have these phones, if we didn't have access to every single person on the planet doing exactly what we're doing, but with, you know, $3 million in their bank account or what have you to help elevate, you know what I mean? It just becomes this back and forth. And truly, it's just a distraction. At the end of the day, it's pulling charge out of you. It doesn't help you get closer to your goal. It drains your life force.
Yeah.
It's wild. I get caught up in it too. I know all about it. I'm just, I get so mad when I do that.
It's so interesting how everything has an energy cost to it.
Yeah.
Well, like, and somebody once, they told me, even when it comes down to morning routine, and I'd like to hear you speak to this, it's like getting things ready the night before. Like, even when it comes down to like a protein shake or like having water with electrolytes, like having things ready so that when you wake up, you don't use any of your mental energy, like doing the stuff that you could have done the night before. And you can just, and I remember, I forget who told me that, but that like made such a difference, thinking about like setting yourself up for the tomorrow you, so your tomorrow you can win.
It's
instead of like, oh, I'll just do it tomorrow. It's like, well, no, why not get ready so that the tomorrow you doesn't have to think as much, right?
And twofold, because when we wake up, for most of us, our cortisol is already spiked, right? So you're already waking up in a heightened state of stress. I do all my stuff the night before, including like make my child's lunch for school. I set my chicory root aside. I have my chicory root. My coffee's prepared. I mean, to the point, this is how special I am. I have an empty glass, chicory root seeds, the press that I put the chicory root in, a spoon, because God forbid I should waste energy going to the drawer. A spoon is laid out, the glass, the coffee mug. It's literally all right there. My pills, my little, you know, vitamins and what have you. And then I set out my workout clothes in the bathroom so I can go literally from brushing my teeth to putting on my clothes to going downstairs to hitting all my buttons, getting on with life. So I can get that usually, so I can get the meditation in before I teach, which doesn't happen all the time. But if things are on track, it does. And then I'm 100% better. Yeah, 100% better.
You speak to that being like your golden hour, that time you're talked about that early morning that you wouldn't trade it for anything, about that 6 a.m. time. What is that?
I love it.
What does that look like though? So you have like, what is your, like, let's say you got to get primed up for the day. Like you're like, it needs to be shaka time. Like we got to fucking be ready. We got to rocket that shaka today. Let's go. Like, what does that look like? Is it the same every day, or do you have like a special thing where you're like, all right, I got to be like dialed today. What does that look like?
Is it cheesy to say that it's the same every day?
No, that's even better.
Okay. Well, cool. Cause it's pretty much the same every day. I just make sure I might wake up a little bit earlier just to make sure that I don't miss the mark. But
what time does that look like?
It's the same. 5:20. But my internal clock will wake me up at 4:57, literally 4 days a week. I look at my clock. I'm like, not really 4:57. So I've got like 23 minutes before I have to actually hit the alarm, but my alarm goes off at 5:20. Sometimes I wake up earlier than that. And then I teach my class 9:44.
Wow.
Is that late? Is that early? That's early. 9:44 is early. I'm in bed at 9:44. I do not see the 10 o'clock hour pass. So I'm asleep before 10.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty boring. Okay. You want to hear about my social life? It goes like this.
Yeah, but hold on a second. There's some meaning to that, because like, I feel like having that, I don't know a successful person in this world that doesn't have some sort of strict routine or some sort of like rituals. Like, I know, yeah, like Alex Hormozi says, get up and work right away. I don't agree. I mean, I can't argue with the money he makes, but I don't necessarily think he's the happiest, the wholeness inside. Yeah. But there's something to be said about the disciplines that you're speaking about, like that.
Oh yeah.
Successful people. Like, wouldn't you say that is like a very important thing, to be able to stick to things over and over? The fact that you have the same thing over and over. Boring is stacked over time. The compound effect is what helps with results, wouldn't you say?
That's, ask James Clear. What would he tell you? 110%. Because I know the difference in my own body when I go to bed at 11 and I sleep past my alarm by like 30 minutes and I wake up and I didn't preset the coffee. I'm already so distraught by those three things. Even one of those things, I'd be like, oh, because my day runs so smoothly. And just like you mentioned, my cortisol is much better in check. By the way, everyone go get your blood panels done. You need to know your blood panels. Mm-hmm. But I got a hold of my blood panels. My cortisol was just through the roof in the morning. So that's partly why I drink the chicory root. That's partly why I started implementing really more, I don't want to say strict, but the boundaries are tight. Like, okay, the going, not seeing 10 o'clock on my phone, making sure that I'm awake by 5:20, and then making sure that I do the things that I need to do the night before, because it's that, what is their formula? It goes like craving, response, reward.
Yeah.
There's something else though. I'm missing one. It's like four letters.
Atomic Habits you're talking,
yeah,
about.
But I'm, yeah, I get to bypass the frustration of should anything go wrong, because everything's laid out for me. So if I wake up and let's say I don't know, Moose has got a broken leg. That's my dog. If he has a broken leg over in the middle of the night, something's terribly wrong. But if I were to wake up and to find like there's a huge emergency I have to tend to, at least I know the coffee's prepped. At least I know I got enough sleep. I can manage it. Like my clothes are there. I can get dressed quickly. Like to me, it's already mitigating the could be problems just by having the routine in place.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. I had another thought and then I just lost it right now. It was about habits and stuff, but.
You want to know the hardest thing that I've had to, like, honestly, one of the most difficult things over the years for me?
What?
I've been able to get through all kinds of like alcohol stuff and like, you know, deaths and all of these things. But for me to get up at the same time early at 5 a.m., when here's the thing, I know that when I get up at that time, I'm at my best. This morning I was up at 5:30. I feel dialed. Like I know that, but it's like my body for some reason plays games with me in the evening. And it's like, you don't need to go to bed. But I know that if I don't have that wind down, I don't sleep. And then I don't want to get up at 5:30. And do I have to get up at 5:30? No, but I know it works. And that has been, I can fast, I can eat healthy, I can do all the things, but for some reason, the thing that I know works the most has been the most challenging, that 5 a.m. thing. It's like, as creatures, like, why is that? Why is something so hard for people?
Like, I think this is just my opinion.
Yeah.
I think that's where your biggest rocket moment will happen, when you get that dialed in. So you have to be so ready. Like for me, I need to think about what mine would be right now, just off the top of my head, but it comes easy for me to stick to my bedtime routine. Like my partner, Matt, he loved to work late at night. Like he was like, I get creative. I have to do the things. I get all my entrepreneurial ideas. I'm like, well, great. I'll see you in the morning because I'm going to sleep. But then he would wake up and he would have to go through his whole routine of like tapping. He would do breath work. He would lay around. He'd like massage out his psoas. I'm like, how long have we been here? It's like 40, 50 minutes of tapping, massage. He went through this whole thing because his nervous system was so different than mine. That is not where I struggle. I think I struggle in other ways, like trying to organize a system for me and my business. That's a big hurdle. Like I have a meeting with hopefully a new mentor coming up on Monday, and she's going to help me with that, I think. But we all have our potholes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think once we get that dialed in, that's when things start to skyrocket for us. So we have to be ready, because if you're going to get your 5 a.m. sleep like in gear, then it's go time. Extra go time, because you're already going. But you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I've known, actually 4:30 is what I was told in my my intuition. 4:30. Wow. Yet it's been the thing that I haven't been able to hold on to, being able to do. Isn't that wild? Like
it makes sense, because you've always got to have something a little out of reach, something that's just going to make you so uncomfortable.
Yeah. And it's the easiest to sabotage too, because it's like the food thing. I don't need to go to bed. This is the entrepreneurial thing too, right? It's like, I don't have a boss, so I don't need to go to bed. That voice, it's like, I mean,
I am HR.
I worked hard today. I can just, but I think it's so relatable.
I worked hard today.
Because I think people, like, this is what people go through, right? Especially with like emotional eating in the evening. It's like, I worked hard. I deserve this. Right. But it's it's like you're choosing that, but you're actually then going to sacrifice something else, like your sleep quality. Then you're not going to feel as good. So it's like, you must see with people all the time.
All the time. I mean, again, poor Matt. Matt's just like, damn, he's going to blow me out of the water. He couldn't go to sleep on an empty stomach, where I thrive on an empty stomach. I don't know if this is from body dysmorphia and horrible eating patterns from being a professional dancer, but if I go to sleep on an empty stomach, I sleep like a brick. And then I wake up and I'm like, let's go. And I'm not even usually hungry in the morning, which is even stranger. But I think my body, in that state of autophagy or whatever, my body like cleans house. And then in the morning, I feel 10 times better. But if I go to sleep having eaten shortly before, it's not good. I feel gross the next day. I feel lethargic. It's really, for me, it's very visceral. And I think that helps my cause. Because some people, I think, like, again, Matt, he was like, I cannot sleep on an empty stomach. I sleep on a full stomach. And I was like, well, I don't know what to say. We're the opposite.
That's an interesting point. Because I think for me, like, I know I'd sleep better without food, but yet it's still one of those things. And I dream. I don't remember my dreams when I don't eat. I do remember them. When I eat, it's interesting, right?
So interesting.
But it's like you get to that point of the evening where it's like, I just want to, at least for me, I'm alone. I'm not doing anything else. I'm not drinking. I want to eat something.
I'll just eat six cookies real quick. There's no judgment there. I know all about it. All about it. But I think, I did 7 rounds of Prolon. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a fasting mimicking program. Yeah. To the point where like I'm on a testimonial for them and I do believe in it. I do notice such a difference because I believe in Dr. Longo's book, the longevity book that he wrote, is something about day 4 of this program, your stem cells start to regenerate.
Yeah.
And you're fully, you know, in ketosis by that point. It's a great jump off if you like to do keto. But what I notice when I do that is how good my sleep is and how my energy is always heightened. And it's because I don't have much to eat. There's not much to eat there. And I always go to bed hungry.
Mm.
It's pretty nuts. I do think there's something going on. I think your body gets to clean itself, cellularly speaking, when you have an empty stomach. It doesn't have to worry about digestion. It just takes care of all the other problems.
Which is your favorite optimal diet for mental, physical, everything? I know it's a question. I'm on keto right now.
Are you?
Yeah. There's no doubt for clarity. Keto is my favorite. Yeah. But I love to eat fruit and stuff like that. But I find I overeat fruit, which it actually has like the opposite. It makes me tired and brain fog. So
weird.
But yeah, like mangoes, I eat too many of them. It's like I'm going to turn into a crackhead or something. It's like, I can't stop.
I love mangoes.
But I'm curious as to like for you, I know we'll look at wrapping this up. I know that we probably got to get going here, but what advice do you have about eating like for people? Like what works for you? And like, you know,
I think people have to experiment with themselves because it was trial and error for me. I was vegan for 84 days. And all I could think about after the first 2 weeks was salmon. It was just like salmon for breakfast. Lox would be great right now. I can't have it. It worked great for the first 2 weeks. And then once my inflammation died down, all my body wanted was fish. So that did not go great. Keto was lovely, except for the fact that I felt gross. I love vegetables. Like I crave vegetables. Like one of my favorite foods is roasted broccoli and roasted Brussels sprouts. Like I'm the weirdest. I know.
No, they're so good.
So, I mean, it's so yummy. So I'm just really excited about it. My go-to right now is just high protein. So I eat a lot of meat. I eat a lot of veggies and I am doing yogurt, like grass-fed full fat yogurt right now. Yeah. And I don't know, it's working right now. It feels good in my body. I feel satiated. So we'll see. I'm always kind of playing around with it. And I also feel like you change. People change. Your body turns over. The system is different. Your stress levels affect it. It's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And when someone asks me that, I just say the same thing. I'm like, try it all. See what works.
Try it all. Yeah.
Like, there's no right or wrong way. Like you have to, cause each person is different.
Yeah.
It's like, you got to take people, you know, people give advice and you take it and try it long enough to see how you feel, you know, and that's all you can do. It's like, for me, like I can't get good meat right now. So I've just been eating a ton of eggs and avocado, which I've actually been feeling really good. I've cut down. I was eating so much red meat. I love meat, but I'm like, I kind of was forced to be like, well, don't really want to eat fish because I feel like, you know, there's a lot of weird mercury and stuff. And
it's
like wild salmon. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to eat lots of eggs and avocado and get some good cheese and raw milk and raw dairy. And that seems to be good. But like you said, there's phases, right?
Right.
I think it's good to like go in and like try different stuff. And it's like, oh, you go for a workout, you don't have energy. Well, maybe you can have a little bit of carbs before, you know, like nothing has to be this dogmatic. You can't do this or that, right?
Would
you
agree? Right. 100%. And I mean, I'm open to stuff. Like I started taking creatine like a year ago and I was like, Bo saw it in the cabinet. He's like, are you trying to bulk up? Why are you taking this? I was like, he's like, can I have some? I'm like, no, prepubescent boy. Jeez. I'm like, it's also good for your brain health. So we're clear. Yes. I mean, we're lifting and enjoying that, but God, I mean, you know, you just got to stay open, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk to us about what you got going on. If people want to work with you or get to learn more about you, speak to us a little bit about the magic that you offer.
The magic. Basically I run an online program for haters. Kidding. I don't. I mean, I'm looking for haters right now. If you'd like to apply. I run an on-demand platform. It's a virtual fitness community where we have monthly strength training that is mostly geared toward women anywhere from like late 30s to late 60s, actually. And then I also offer mobility classes that are joint specific. So they help you build articular resilience and help you reduce inflammation. That's all the Kin Stretch and FRC that I teach. And then I teach in person in Santa Monica. I teach yoga in person, but that yoga has evolved over the years, a little more mobility based, less dogmatic, less traditional, not fancy. I like my fancy gloves have come off. So now we just keep it basic and more about the breath and enjoying ourselves. So that's that. You can go to sweatandstillness.com and check that out. And then I'm on Instagram, of course, Nicole Shaka, TikTok, the Nicole Shaka, because it was taken. Not because I'm fooling myself.
The best last name.
Thank you. And had nothing to do with that.
And your email.
Oh, yes. I'm on Substack. So there's a link in my link tree on any of my social profiles, or you can just go to Substack and search for Nicole Shaka. But I send out a weekly email every Tuesday that is full of overshares and deep thoughts. And it also shares about my offerings, whatever's coming up that month.
Yeah. And Shock and Y'all podcast.
And I should probably do more with my time. And a Shock and Y'all podcast, which is, oh, and my children's book.
Right. Yoked, which is amazing. I really enjoyed that.
My little cutie book. Isn't that sweet?
It's at my mom's house right now. I read that in like 10 minutes or whatever.
You have this book?
Of course I do.
Lance.
Mine's not the hardcover though. It's the soft cover.
Oh, the hardcover is where it's at.
Yeah.
I'm a book snob. When I was publishing that, I was like, I only want hardcover. And they're like, that's not how this works. And I was like, well, fine. Yeah. Anyway.
So we covered quite a bit. We started out on the heavy stuff, kind of ended with the light stuff. If you had any advice for somebody that may be struggling right now, or somebody that's, you know, going through it, maybe they've lost somebody, maybe they're just struggling in business, going through some adversity, what would you say to them right now to leave us with?
One of my favorite quotes ever, and I don't know where I heard it initially, but every obstacle introduces us to ourselves. And I live by that. I think, as we mentioned before, every opportunity for failure, really, if you flip it on its head, it's just an opportunity to know yourself more. So whether the failure is a sudden loss or your job or a divorce, I don't know. I mean, the list is endless, but there's an opportunity to really go inward in each one of those moments that you wouldn't have otherwise. You can, I don't want to say coast, but you can get away with the status quo for a long time. But those moments that come at you that are so hard and so tough are almost without fail the biggest teachers. They're just going to teach you more and more about yourself if you're ready.
I got one question for that.
Uh-oh. Yes, sir.
How does somebody that is in that moment, how do they realize that in the moment? Because in afterwards, it's easy to say, but how do they realize that in the moment? Like, I say that because like, it's like, I think I could just hear people, well, yeah, it's easy to say, but how do we take that right now? Like, how do we realize right now that this thing is going to be the thing that we talk about later? Like, how do we? I don't know if it's
because the only way out is through. So you can't, there is no other alternative. Like you have to walk through your own fire. You have to walk through your own pile of shit to get to the green grassy field. Mm. So you can stay in that as long as you want. And I've been there, man. I have ridden that horse into the sunset, but the faster I just love the word alchemize. The faster you let it alchemize, the faster you let it move through you, the quicker you get through it. You just have to, what is your option there? You know what I mean? Like if you're in the darkness, you just hang tight. You could.
Yeah.
But, it's like that expression, anger doesn't last. You have to keep choosing it. You have to keep choosing it. And at any moment, literally in an instant, you could choose something else. You could choose a pause. You could choose a breath. You could choose forgiveness. You could choose grace for yourself. So I think it's the same with hardship, right? You have to, in a way, you have to keep fighting for your limitations, as John, or what's his name? Quick. John Quick.
Yeah. It's like, if you're in the shit, just keep going.
Yeah. There's got to be a light at the end of that. It doesn't stay like that forever.
Yeah. But that's the thing I think is so, cause like even like trying to like really pinpoint, trying to understand that in general for people, it's like when you're in it, it's so hard cause your lens is so clouded because you feel like you're never going to get out of it. This is it. But just like knowing that this will be the thing that you talk about later, like this is going to be the thing that we want to have stories to talk about.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, don't you want stories? Well, this is that one, right? I've had to tell myself that when I was in the shit too. It's like, this is what you signed up for. So like, you got to just, this things will get better. And I think like, that's why I think it's an important point to walk away with is that, yeah, like being in the shit, it's like, you just have to know that it'll get better.
Yeah.
You can't run away. You can't hide. You just got to go and it will get better.
And it's like you said, if we contracted down into these bodies, into this time with these parents and these life circumstances, then you're set up to succeed already. You are. You signed up for it.
We chose it. That's it.
I chose it. Ladies, so proud of myself.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
There's so much stuff we could talk about. We could have like, I mean, you and I could have like 2-3 hour podcasts.
I know. We're going to turn it into a 6-part series. Just for us. Everyone else is like, we're done. We're good. We're all right.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Great episode, right? Man, we covered a lot. And I really hope that helps you if you are currently grieving, if you've lost somebody, and you know that you have some tools for the day when it does happen. As you know, as I said before, we can't escape it. So I hope that episode was helpful for you. I highly recommend connecting with Nicole on social media. All her goodies are in there, her TikTok, her Instagram, Facebook, website, podcast, Shockin' Y'all, which you guys got to check out. It's great. I was blessed to be a guest on there. One of our first 8 guests, I believe. That's all there as well. And also, before you go, she's got a promo going on. It's called May Fit 2024. It's a virtual group strength training plus mobility and yoga. It's a community of brilliant, supportive, fun women aging 35 to 65. You train 4 days a week. And the best part is it's all live on demand. So you can sign up for May Fit 2024 now if you use the code Lance, L-A-N-C-E, at checkout, you get 20% off. The link is below. It's on her website, sweatandstillness.com/monthly groups. It's there. Enter the code L-A-N-C-E, Lance, at checkout for 20% off. Thanks so much, everybody. If you aren't subscribed to University of Adversity, please make sure you do so wherever you listen to this. It really helps. Whether it's subscribe on Apple, whether it's follow on Spotify, whether it's CastBox, whatever, go follow it. The episode will drop live into your inbox of whatever platform. All right, everybody, much love. We will catch you next time.